Sure. Hi, Amanda. I'm a CEO of Roommate Group. We are a group of 7 studios focusing on art, dev, and now starting this year, QA and trailer production.
Is there an opportunity for you to build the game on your own, or is there a situation where you kind of have to have an outsourcing partner and you can't move without them?
That's a hard one. I think it is possible. I mean, theoretically, it is possible to have everything in-house, like don't outsource anything. It is possible. You can hire these people. I don't know, you can build a production pipeline in a way that it will work. But though it is theoretically possible, it doesn't make much sense practically, because if you go to an external provider, to the service provider, you will get highly specialized people who worked as a team, who can provide you with whatever you need, either expertise in some niche domain or capacity or a mix. I think the easiest example to think about it is probably quality assurance or localization, which we actually don't do, like as a Roommate Group. But that's the very easy example. I mean, probably you can do it yourself, but that doesn't make sense because you need a large amount of people in a very specific moment in time for quite a short time. You don't need them on a constant basis. So that's why those services were first to be outsourced to someone else.
So let's talk a little bit. You kind of touched on some of the things that outsourcing partners and service providers that they do for video game companies. Like, what are the biggest asks from clients when they're working with you, or maybe overall in the market? If you can dissect and say, okay, so, you know, QA or art or maybe localizations, like what are like the biggest markets and maybe where the biggest demand are?
The overall outsourcing market is huge. It's like certain billions. It solely depends like which kind of services you combine and so on. So the numbers can differ, but it's a huge market. I cannot say what is in the highest demand because markets probably for art or QA will be bigger than for CoDev. But that doesn't mean that the demand for CoDev is still big and the supply is much lower. So overall, I think demand is there for any services. I mean, that's why you have certain billions. In terms of asks, probably the bigger, the more in-demand expertise, the more harder to find expertise you have, the bigger will be the volume of asks from the clients. I can tell that, for example, in art, definitely right now, like 3D photo, like photoreal stuff or highly complex stuff is something that clients are asking us for. Because not fewer number of companies can do that at a level of quality that a AAA production needs.
So let's talk a little bit about that. So when you're doing these high-quality, complicated 3D stuff, right, what are you relying on mostly? So is this a talent, or is this technology, or is this maybe some proprietary stuff that you have? What drives kind of like the competitive edge here? Is it enough to hire kind of like the best of the best? But then again, how do you hire them in your market and so on? Like, how do you create this expertise, I guess? Like, how do you build this capacity that can deliver at a certain amount of quality? Like, how can you constantly push them to be better? Because it's like it's a super competitive space.
It's a mix of finding the right talent. I mean, best of the best. And building internally right pipelines, right processes to make sure that you're consistently delivering a quality product. same goes for our CODEV services. In our CODEV services, we also have proprietary technologies that we are using and that we are offering to our clients. In art, I don't feel like we have some proprietary tools that, but we do have, I think, one of the best talents that you can find on the market. And we have processes in place that we are not reliant on the belief that this is a good artist, so we know that he or she will produce a great asset. We have a process inside to make sure that the asset that will be delivered to the client will be at the quality bar.
And when you're working with a client, I can bring you an example from way back where a company was building a very bit large MMO, and there was a particular stylized style. And they got so tired of kind of like constantly back and forth with the, you know, with their own artists or with the outsourced artists, that they created this huge Bible of kind of like how do you do stuff. And it almost became like a textbook for future generation of artists, that they used it as a learning kind of like, because of the gaming specific technical aspects, right, with the UVs and the number of polygons and how do you place them. So there was like a lot of technicalities there. When you work with clients, do they give you something like that? Do they give you these like very precise requirements, or are you more like a partner that helps them develop these requirements and kind of build, kind of become part of their pipeline?
We can do both, but our preferred way is being a partner. I think that's why we are built as a group. So we can do, like, technically, we have all the capabilities, and creatively we have all the capabilities to build a full cycle for the client. So our task is to provide as much value as possible, and the bigger chunk of work we can deliver, like, ready for the client, the better for us and for the client, the bigger value we provide for them. So option two, when we are doing something from the scratch, ideally at the pre-production stage, because we have highly creative people in our team, like Massive Black from the US, they are doing like enormous stuff, and up to the way that it's like fully integrated into the game.
I think there is no business in the world that is kind of like immune to the macroeconomics and all the factors and, you know, influencing our day-to-day, our lives. And feels like outsourcing is still, you know, one of those businesses. How do these changes that we see going on around influence you? Like, what are the good trends that you're seeing with some positive impacts? And what are the trends that may potentially hold some risks?
In terms of macroeconomic, I mean, like recession or?
Yeah.
We do see it. It's not like we see a recession because it's not here. And I don't know, you can look at the market growth and consumer spending trends for gaming specifically. The market is still growing. Maybe it's not growing as fast as it was growing before, especially in COVID. It looks much better for PC and console games rather than for purely mobile. But market is still growing. And there is no economic recession, but we do feel that all the clients and all their investors this year were more cautious with their spending, more cautious in funding new game development. It's not necessarily concerning outsourcing, but even internally. So we do feel this cautiousness on the market.
What are the things that you're seeing that might have a positive impact? Or maybe, you know what? Maybe like changes in the current distribution. Yeah. Current distribution of the way outsourcing works geographically. You know what I mean? Right, so there are certain centers where a lot of outsourcing power is currently centered, right? Do you see the redistribution of workforce maybe or maybe some new regions mm-hmm. popping up with kind of like having a greater influence on the overall market?
I believe we will see lots of this redistribution in the upcoming years. Tamil Nadu markets are becoming more expensive for outsourcers and for game developers. So they will be looking to enter new markets. At the same time, there are huge geopolitical risks that we all feel probably. U.S. clients and U.S. companies probably will be more cautious working with Chinese companies or companies with significant presence in China, or companies who still has, for whatever reason, some presence in Russia. So this will, and they will look for alternative markets. I believe that Latin America will be a new frontier. It's a huge talent pool in the same time zone with the U.S. And even right now, we see lots of companies opening in both developers and outsourcers in Latin America. We last year made an acquisition of Puga Studios from Brazil, and we see a great potential in this specific market.
Well, what about India overall? Because I keep hearing this, again, from like a very high-level perspective. In U.S., there are these huge... They invest heavily in 401ks, and mm-hmm. you know, 20%, like I think, of everyone's savings just go into 401ks. And those 401ks, they want a safer bet. A lot of them were doing something in China because they considered to be like a safer growth opportunity. Now a lot of them are kind of like turning their heads towards India, and they're thinking about the tech presence there and kind of like about all those. And like if you look at companies like Rockstar, they just owned, they bought their own outsourcing partner there, and they have this huge Rockstar India. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like this is a good geography to poke around and start looking for partners and maybe acquisitions, or is this something kind of like you don't want to touch until now?
I think it's a good geography. I just think the competitions there are probably much higher because India was a mecca for outsourcing and for games as well for quite some time. So maybe it's got additional attention due to risks associated with Chinese presence. But it's still a good market to be in. There's still a huge market and a huge talent pool.
One of the reasons people were flocking to India, and I guess China, is one of the cost of living there is much lower. Salaries are, again, much lower if you compare it to like U.S. or mm-hmm. Western Europe. And it made sense, right? You could have a margin and still get mm-hmm. A lot of profit in terms of, you know, cost savings for the client. Do you see the situation changing? Like if you look, again, on a higher level, I guess people are starting to live better. I know we have different situations geopolitically. But overall, the cost of living seems to be increasing everywhere. Do you think this is this influencing kind of like your business, your margins? Do you see other ways of kind of like countering that? Because like in an ideal world, we would love to have everyone getting, you know, nice competitive pay, mm-hmm. Live in a nice area and kind of like be able to do, you know, what they want to do. But how do you see this like from your perspective? Because you have this vast amount of companies in different regions. So as a CEO, you're probably, your head hurts more than it should be hurting, kind of thinking about all of those things, and how do you blend them together under one BML sort of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I'm totally with you. I mean, we are happy if salaries are growing globally. We are happy people can live better than they lived before. And that's partially why we are doing our business in the regions where we are doing this business, because that's boosting the growth in this in those communities. More people will be coming in, getting needed skills, and have better prospects in their life. So overall, industry development is good for us as well, because our task is still to be competitive and still to be a value-added service for our clients. And if salaries are growing across the board, the same goes to our clients. So we all have this increase in the costs. And part of it goes to our sales, right? Because like you can't do a loss-making business in any case. But that's part of life, and we are fine with that. But of course, as a service provider, we are still looking for the market where we can get a cost advantage. Otherwise, we will not be competitive. So being being completely open, I mean, it's still a business.
First of all, there's nothing wrong about it. And I had a conversation with some people from CD Projekt, like back, mm-hmm. I think in May, where they had this event in Krakow. And one of the reasons they said, basically, they said one of the reasons why Polish game development is so profitable, or kind of like so big, let's say, mm-hmm. right, is because of the Polish zloty. This is just cheaper as a currency, and because of the exchange rates, it's kind of like it's cheaper to have the workforce there, because they're getting all the money in USD, and then they're paying salaries in zloty and so on.
Like zloty actually strengthened a lot, mm-hmm. But but it's not only about exchange rate. Cost of living in Poland is generally lower than in the US or in the UK, especially in London. It's much lower, and thus the salaries are lower. So that's why, mm-hmm. and the talent is there, great companies, great education, and people with great experience, because great companies are like CD Projekt are already there. And that's why we also opened an office in Poland, because you can find a good team there and still be competitive in terms of your sales rate.
So let's talk a little bit about this talent thing. So two questions in one. So first of all, whom are you looking for right now? Like, if you're looking for talent, whom are you looking for? And the second one, how do you retain talent? What are like your... Because this is probably like the talent pool is not really that big. It keeps flocking from one company to another. CD Projekt has, you know, brand equity, so they can just attract everyone and say, hey, we're mm-hmm. building this, you know, Witcher 65 or a new Cyberpunk, or, you know, like a big brand thing. Some people flock to this and they feel like it. And in US, this is generally the way how they attract talent. Like if it's a huge company like, you know, Naughty Dog or Disney, they will leverage the hell out of what they've built previously to attract people from colleges or just kind of talented individuals and so on. How do you approach it? Because this is a different business. I have already kind of probably have some answers for you, but I want to hear your opinion.
Maybe you can share some tips. But we, as a service provider, contrary to any other industry, actually, where people really won't have to work on the product and so on, we have an advantage. For you as a developer or as an artist, we can offer an opportunity to work on different projects. So you work with different technical problems, different design problems, different art styles, and that's something usually a publisher or first-party developer cannot offer you, because you are assigned to this specific title. So you are doing trees for this title for the next X years until you switch to the other studio or to another employer.
This is exactly what I was talking about. I had the same idea, and... I think with these large studios where they have like really well established IPs, remember I was talking about mm-hmm. this kind of like guidelines, and what they're looking for is that you need to fit almost 100% into this particular vision that they're doing. Right? They don't want to, like if they're doing like Last of Us Part 2, there needs to be a specific kind of zombie that you need to be kind mm-hmm. of like making. If it deviates a little bit and so on, they're not gonna hire you, because they just have someone who's like have to invest less time teaching and so on. And this is kind of like a blessing and a curse for talent, I guess, because if you are in that spot, then it's great, right? Because thousands of people like the style of like Diablo or World of Warcraft. That's why, you know, Disney is like a great... basically, Blizzard, they have no problem hiring talent. And again, Blizzard stole most of their art style from Disney, which is like in the same area there in Irvine. And but the curse is like that you end up doing the same thing 60-100 times during your... If you work there for more than 5 years, people burn out very quickly. And I've seen on 80 level, we've seen people who are very successful. They have wonderful careers. They have like work stability, which is in this industry something that not a lot of companies can provide. And this is probably maybe another advantage for like service providers like yourself, where you know that there is still going to be work coming, no matter if that product was successful or not successful. Maybe it was a, you know, a bad bet. You will still have more people coming, more clients, and they will provide you more versatile projects to choose from. Because I know for a fact some large organizations, they start their own internal outsource departments just to keep people in the company, because they just get tired of, like, you know, modeling guns or something. They just want to do something else. And then they try to find some work for them just so for them to keep them between projects or whatever, what have you.
Definitely with a service provider, working for a service provider, you have a possibility to learn much faster and try yourself in the different problems. Like, we're very much focused on nerds in our discussion, but for us, CODAV is a huge part of what we are doing. And it's, and this part is getting bigger and bigger. So in this area, the logic is the same. You can work with different titles. And I think the sense of accomplishment that you mentioned at the beginning is also very important, because maybe you don't work directly for Diablo, but you can still be in the titles. Yeah. And it's like the... And I know that our people, they are very much looking forward to that. It's like, I will be there. I can put it. Yes, this is my work. This is what have I done. And then it doesn't matter whether you worked like for publisher, like whoever in this ecosystem you work for, you still was a part of Diablo.
So let's talk a little bit about the... like the workload, or how much work do you actually need to push through, you know, your teams per period of time. There's a lot of talk about, in game industry especially, about overtime, that people are, you know, they have to almost sleep in the offices when the release is coming in and so on. How do you work with this? How do you kind of like try to solve this challenge? Because I'm sure that there are sometimes... times where you need to work a little bit more and so on. But what are the mechanisms that allow you to have a more structured kind of like work-life balance? I know a CEO probably doesn't have one, but like in your teams and subordinates.
It's very much depend on the studio, because their process or a pipeline is different. But I think I cannot tell for each and every, you know, like skill set, how it will look like. But we work, our producers work hard to estimate the workload needed. And when we do the estimation, we never assume that, and here people will work overtime, and here people will not go for a vacation, and that's why we will fit in. It's never an assumption. And I think in majority of cases, people fit in. And of course, there is always something can happen, some unforeseen problem and so on. But the release is there, so you need to work overtime or something. These things are happening. But in majority of cases, it's producers who work to make sure that the commitment that was given to the client was like included some of the unforeseen circumstances that might arise, schedules like holidays or people's vacations and so on, to plan the work accordingly.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about this code dev thing. I mean, we just had this large mm-hmm. conversation in a bigger group, but why is it beneficial basically for both the client, I guess, and the service provider? Like, why giving kind of like away more work to your partner is a good thing?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
What can we provide is a highly skilled team who probably will, like, to build such a team from the scratch will take quite some time and some effort. I'm not saying that it's impossible, because probably everything is possible, but that will take time, effort, and additional costs to hire these people and for them to work as a team for some time to establish all the internal processes and so on, so on, so on, and only then they can start bringing you value. In our case, it's already been done. You have people who have experience, you have everything that is needed, and in our CodeDev case, some additional proprietary tools that can start on your project. Like, I'm not saying immediately, then that depends on availability, but definitely much, much sooner than the team built from the scratch. And plus, we are lifting some of the risk from the client's shoulders, because they don't need to think about, okay, but if it doesn't work, should I terminate it? Because I actually need additional capacity or additional for this period of time. If we are talking about something like team extension, if we are talking or porting, like, we can assign a team, and we will assign a team that did quite some ports, you know, and that means that we will do it faster and more reliable than the internal team that is doing it for the first time. And the internal team then can be reassigned to something else that clients need while ports are given to the service provider.
You know, and I'm sure from your consulting days, you remember that, like, there's the idea of, like, complement to a business, right? So where, like, if you're selling fries and you add ketchup, then the willingness mm-hmm. to pay for fries and ketchup is much higher than if you're just selling fries, mm-hmm. right? Is there a thing like that in your business that helps you kind of, like, sort of in a way, I see your ideal client as a bigger entity who really doesn't want a lot of risk on their books. They don't want to have a lot of costs on their books, so they're trying to use you as kind of like, you know, get rid of the extra costs sort of like in their, maybe on their spreadsheet, right? But are there any other things that kind of like help you kind of reach the client or make the client like more agreeable, or them, you know, buying the service more?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that we are, like, reducing costs from their balance sheet, mm-hmm. but we are reducing risk on their product. Mm-hmm. And I think for our clients, it's largely more important. So we can deliver a bigger part at quality, and that would be more efficient, and with the less risk that it will not work out, compared to doing that internally. And sometimes internal clients even don't have this expertise that we have and that we can do for them. So it's more in terms of like a complementary skill set, or I think it's a complementary business models, because we can take a part which is still a part of your core business, but we can do it in a more quality and efficient way and faster than you can do it yourself.
I gotcha. So it's kind of like a synergy coming from these.
I think that's the best way to describe it. And in our case, we can do a bigger part with a seamless integration inside for the client. Like if we are doing, let's say, full cycle game development, we will have one producer on our side, core team on our side, and then our studios will work together if needed to provide everything, like including art, including quality assurance. Mm-hmm. And client doesn't need to manage that. He doesn't need to say, okay, so I have these guys who are doing QA, these guys who are doing art, okay, and I need to control the quality in each of the steps. We will do that for the client and deliver a product according to what they like, working with them, developing it with them, and changing with them.
Mm-hmm. So when we think about complements, there's also the idea of substitutes, right? Mm-hmm. And don't want to go into like the darker part of our conversation, but let's talk a little about the things that might worry you or how do you play with them. So there is the idea that large companies like Ubisoft or mm-hmm. let's say the Rockstar, they might have their internal outsourcing teams when mm-hmm. they can afford it, right? Mainly for the same reasons of, you know, time efficiency, but also kind of people not burning out and so on. There is, you know, emerging disrupting technologies, mm-hmm. like we talked today, right? Where do you see kind of like those risks, and how are you as a company trying to, you know, either pivot or work with those risks to make sure that you, you know, continue to mm-hmm. operate years in the future?
We are doing research ourselves. We want to looking at what emerging tools, like what AI can do or cannot do, and potentially how it can be used by us or by our clients, or by us and our clients, to boost efficiency. Because AI is, as any other automation tools, it should boost efficiency. With efficiency, it should boost demand from the consumer side to have higher quality content, higher fidelity art, because now you sort of can provide it. You have technology, and as soon as your competitor, like new titles, started to do that, you, even being an indie studio, consumers will already expect certain quality of art. So this definitely will boost efficiency. It's not totally clear how exactly at this specific moment in time how it will be used, what can be substituted by AI, and what probably will not be substituted for a much longer period of time. But how can you use it and in your pipeline? Plus, there is a legal framework that is not solved yet, and probably there will be specifics in different markets and so on. So there is a huge way to go. But being one of the industry players, we do our research, testing different stuff, doing partnerships. I don't know whether you saw the news or not with Zebra AI to make sure that we are the first adopters and maybe even translators.
We're talking, by the way, with Zebra AI at this Gamescom as well.
Okay.
Yeah, love them. Yeah. So you kind of started answering that, but my last question is like, you're doing a lot of those acquisitions. You're doing these technical partnerships and so on. Where is Roommate Group kind of like going into the next 5-10 years? Like, what are your aspirations? What are your goals? How do you see yourself like in the future?
I think the growth is definitely part of our DNA. Each and every leader that we have in the organization is committed to growth. And we were, and historically we are growing like 50, 60, 70% per year. This year probably will be slower, but we will still have growth. So we plan to grow further. We entered new services end of last, but basically this year, with QA Studio and Trailer Production Studio. So we plan to keep growing, increasing our portfolio, seeing which services are value-add services for the clients to make sure that we stay relevant and we actually solve the problems for them rather being just a capacity extension. That's definitely not where we see ourselves as an industry player. And we are looking in maybe in creating our own prototypes and being a game developer.
Gotcha.
It's not yet set in stone, so I don't want to do false advertisement, but that's something we are looking at.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for finding the time. It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for enjoying another episode of the 80 Level Roundtable podcast. Check out upcoming episodes on the 80 Level website at 80.lv. Join our career site at 80.lv/RFP. And share our podcast with friends and on your social networks.